Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Pei Tes. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf tafes. We are on the very bottom of Pei Ches and Aleph. We are starting at the two dots at the bottom of the Amud. First thing we do is we quote the heading from the Mishnah Chereshot Vekatan Begiasan Ra. If you have an interaction, a Chavala interaction with a Chereshot Vekatan, so that is not going to work out well. It's one directional from a financial relationship where if you damage any one of them, you're going to be obligated. If they damage you, they're not going to be obligated. That is the heading. And we are going to leave the heading of the Mishnah. We're going to get involved in a story and a discussion. And the Gemara coming up over here is going to be a little bit complex. We've dealt with these issues before. Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. Let's begin with the story and we will... We'll lay everything out. We'll hopefully flesh out all the details. Imid Rav Shmuel Bar Abba me'Hagrunya. So the mother of Rav Shmuel Bar Abba, who was from Hagrunya, so Havnasiv Leila Rabbi Abba. So she was married to Rabbi Abba. Okay. And Kasfino Lenechsel Rav Shmuel Bar Abba Bira. She writes off all of her property to Rav Shmuel Bar Abba, her son. Okay, now let's organize this information. Now she's running over her property. When we say her property, so we could be talking about one of two things. We could talk about her nechsei tzon barzel. We could talk about her nechsei malug. When a woman gets married, so she brings assets into the marriage, and she could bring her assets into the marriage in one of two ways. She can, number one, she could bring it in as nechsei tzon barzel, which means that she will appraise the property at the time of the marriage. She will then write the amount of the property in the ksuva. The husband will assume the ownership of the property, but with the understanding that upon death or divorce, the full value of that property is going to be given back to her at the time of death or divorce. That's what's called nechsei tzon barzel. It's tzon barzel. It's iron sheep, because regardless of fluctuation of the price of the actual property itself, the fact of the matter is that it was appraised at the time of the marriage, and it's all going to go back to her upon death or divorce. That's one. Two, which is what we're talking about over here, is what's called nechsei malug. Nechsei malug is property that she has at the time of marriage, and she keeps at the time of marriage. She doesn't write it into the ksuva. It's hers. However, as part of the marriage arrangement and agreement, so there's a number of reciprocal responsibilities and benefits that go from the husband to the wife and from the wife to the husband. And one of them is that when a woman gets married and she has assets that are not written to the ksuva, so even though the assets are hers, but the husband gets to enjoy the payers, the husbands will be able to reap dividends from the assets that she has. And we're going to be discussing this in the context of a very simple division of Kinyan Haguf versus Kinyan HaPeiros. When a woman gets married, so her property is what's called Kinyan Haguf. She has title to the property. She is the owner of the property. She remains the owner of the property. However, Kinyan HaPeiros, in terms of the dividends, the husband owns the dividends. Now, generally speaking, if we were to divide any general asset into the Guf versus the Peiros, so you would say, I would say that generally speaking, who's considered the owner? In other words, if we ask the question, who is the rightful owner of such an asset? So we would say, of course, the person who has the Kinyan HaGuf. The Kinyan HaPeiros, that's just a dividend that comes off the Guf. But the Guf itself is that which you actually own. And so therefore, she's the owner. So here we go. We are now discussing a woman who has Nechsei Malug. And what she's now going to do with the Nechsei Malug is she's going to write it off to her son. Write it off meaning she's taking her property and she's gifting it to her son while she's still alive. And so the question over here becomes a really simple question. After she dies, who now becomes the rightful owner of that property? It would seem to be that this is a very straightforward, cut and dry discussion. And it's not going to be straightforward, and it's not going to be cut and dry, and it will take the entirety of Pei Ches Amud Beis. I'm kind of happy that yesterday we ended off early, and I don't like being behind in general, although you wouldn't tell. This is really the beginning of the discussion, and it's going to go into today's daf, into the top of Pei Ches Amud Aleph. So it will take some time for the Gemara to really develop and unfold this entire saga. So she has nechsei malug. She writes it off to her son. She dies. Who now becomes the rightful owner? So let's follow the story as the story itself develops in the Gemara. So we're on the very bottom of Pei Ches Amud Aleph. So She writes it off to, she writes over her properties to her son. So basically, she's granting her son title to her property, her nechselah property. Then she dies. Next, Azal Rav Shmuel bar Abba, Kamei de Rav Yirmiya bar Abba. So now Rav Shmuel bar Abba goes in front of Rav Yirmiya bar Abba for a psak. Who owns it? So, So Rav Yirmiya bar Abba says, you're the owner. What do you mean? Your mom wrote off the property to you. She, it's Nechzei Malug. She was the owner of the title of that property. She owned the king and haguf of the property. She wrote it over to you. Her husband only had the king and peiros. Of course it belongs to you. Rav Yirmiya bar Abba says, I don't even understand what the discussion even is involved. It's clearly yours. So Azal Rabbi Abba, so now her husband, her now widowed husband, she's dead. So Azal Rabbi Abba Amrle Lamilsa Kamed Rav Oshia. So he goes and he presents the case in front of Rav Oshia. Azal Rav Oshia Amr Kamed Rav Yehuda. And then the case goes in front of Rav Yehuda. Amrle Achem Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, well, that's funny. I have a tradition received from Shmuel. And it is Haisha Shemachar B'Nechse Malug B'Chaye Bala. If a woman sells her Nechse Malug while her husband's alive, Umeisa, and she dies, Habal Motzi Mi'ar Lakuchos. The husband is going to take it away from the lekuchos. The husband will essentially have the first right to that property, and he will collect that property, even though she sold that property. Even though, let's spell it out, even though she was the owner of the gufa davar, she owned the property, she has the title to the property, the title's under her name, it doesn't matter. When she dies, the husband is going to be able to collect that property. Okay, so this is a statement made by Shmuel. Now, at this point in time, you could look at Rashi, although I'm going to right now ignore Rashi for reasons which I'll explain later. You could look at Rashi. Rashi's going to give away the answer to why that should be. I don't want to give it away right now. Let's go through the Gemara. And the truth of the matter is what Rashi says right here at the top of the Amud is really going to be the Gemara's conclusion at the very bottom. So if you want a spoiler, so you look at Rashi. But for our purposes right now, let's behave as if we don't understand the statement of Shmuel, and it's really difficult to understand. She is the owner of the property. The husband only has the payros. That's all he has. So the truth of the matter is that when you think about this case, you really have to consider the fact that Rav Yirmiya seems like he's right, meaning that she writes the properties off to her son. She's gifting the property over to her son. Okay, so her son should be the owner of the property. Now, it is true. Well, let's also take one more thing into consideration. It is true that when a woman dies and she's married, I'll say it simpler. When a wife dies, it's true the husband inherits her estate. Okay, and yes, it's a question of whether or not that's a din d'oraisa or it's a din d'rabbanan. But regardless of what level din that is, a husband does inherit his wife's estate. But over here, okay, that's true that the husband inherits the wife's estate. But she sold it off. In this case, she gifted it to her son. So it's not hers anymore. It belongs to her son. So if you think about this case, you think now that Rav Yirmiya is really right, that really her son should be the rightful owner of it. And why should it be that there is another side to it? And not only is there another side to it, on the other side of that is Shmuel. Meaning in the halacha generally falls like Shmuel. On the other side of that is Shmuel. And Shmuel is telling us that no, that the husband is actually going to go ahead and collect that property, even though she wrote over that property to her son. So there's much to develop over here. There's much to discuss on this case. Let us continue in the Gemara. So, Amrlei Hachem Shmuel, I read this already. Heishu Shemachar B'nechse Melug B'chaye Bala Umeisa Habal Motzi Me'ala Kuchas. Okay. Amru Kamei D'Rav Yirmiya. So now, after hearing what Shmuel had to say, the matter went back to Rav Yirmiya. And remember, Rav Yirmiya awarded the property over to the son. He felt that the son was the rightful owner of the property. So now, Amru Kamei D'Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amrlehu Ana Masnisa Yadana. So Rav Yirmiya says, look, all this is so fancy for me. This discussion is so sophisticated. I don't understand the sophistication of this discussion. I know Mishnayos. And we're gonna learn a Mishnah together. And having had learned the Mishnah together, so now you're gonna see that after having learned this Mishnah, I am right. I'm absolutely right that the son is the rightful owner. Did not. So we're gonna learn a Mishnah together in Baba Basra, and the Mishnah goes like this. So let's say a father and son, they're both alive, and the father now writes over his property over to his son. Now what does that mean? He writes over his property to his son. Meaning that right now there is a piece of property that the father owns, and he says, you know what? I want to make sure my son gets it. Now, later on, we're going to discover, okay, and I'm going to give away a little bit of it now, we're going to discover that there were other sons, and he's not the only son. And basically, the father knows that if he dies, so then there's going to be an equitable distribution of his estate, and he doesn't want that. So, what he's going to do, you know, he's going to do a little bit of planning, of estate planning, and what he's going to do now is he's going to take this property, and he's going to write it over to his son, so now his son becomes the rightful owner. However, he says to his son, but look, while I'm still alive, I'm going to still enjoy the peros. Meaning, I like my retirement. I like my retired life. I like being comfortable. So I'm going to still enjoy the peros. So basically, we're going to have a property where we're going to split the guf and the peros. You, son, are going to get the guf hadavar. You'll be now you'll be the name on the title of the property. But I will retain all dividends from that property. Good? Now, at this point, while they're both alive, the son can't sell the property because the father's still alive and the father has the peros hadavar. So the son cannot make a clean sale of that property because that property is not fully his. And at the same time, the father can't sell the property because he does not have his name on the title of the property. The title of the property belongs to his son. And so all he has is just the dividends off that property. He can't sell that as well. Well, I got to be clear the way I say it. He can't sell the property. Now, then the Mishnah goes on. Machar ha'av mukhur machiyamos. Now, let's say the father wants to sell. So the Mishnah Baba Basra says, sure, the father can sell. Now, that seems a little confusing because that's followed immediately after the Mishnah says, you know, the father can't sell. And then the Mishnah says, oh, by the way, the father can sell. But the simple pshat in the Mishnah is, the father can sell his peros, meaning what does he have? The only thing he has on the property is just the dividends of the property. Fine. You want to sell the dividends to somebody? Sure. So, in other words, he goes over to a potential buyer and he says, look, I enjoy these dividends on the property, but right now I'll be happy to sell you that. In other words, you'll get the fruit, I'll get money. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, it's just a question of a different form of asset, but I'll sell you the dividends. That's fine. The father can sell that, and obviously it's only going to be good until he dies, because once he dies, so then the dividends go directly to the son, who is the title, who is the owner of the property. Now, machar haben ein lokech ad sheyamos ha'av. Now, let's say the son sold his deed. Now again, the son only has guf hadavar. The son only has the title to the property, but he does not have the peros. So what if the son sold that? So the Mishnah says, ein lo lokech ad sheyamos ha'av. The buyer who bought the property from the son is not going to be able to collect on that property until the father dies. Period. That is the end of the Mishnah. And now we're going to go one step further, having learned this Mishnah Baba Basra. Now this is going to take some time to develop, so let's go step by step. Now, ki ma'is av mi'ah isle lokeach. So now, the obvious inference from the Mishnah Baba Basra. Once the father dies, so then whoever bought the property from the son now is going to acquire the property. That's clear. Now, ve'af agav demesa ben b'chaya av. Now the Gemara is going to go even one step further. Let's go over our timeline. Let's say father wrote over the property to his son, meaning that now he puts the son's name on the title of the property while retaining the payers for himself. Then let's say that the son sold off the property. And then let's imagine that the son predeceased the father, so that the son never took hold of the peros. The son only had, over the course of his lifetime, the guf hadavar, but he did not have the peros. So, now it's not clear that the Mishnah Baba Basra is speaking to this case, but we're going to assume that the Mishnah is speaking about such a case. And if the Mishnah is speaking such a case, v'af agav, the mesa ben b'chaya av, delo asuli dea ben, ki Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. We're going to say right now that if the son sold the property, the sale would be a valid sale. We're just going to wait until the father dies. Meaning, even though the son never took hold of the peros, even though after the son sold the guf hadavar, the son died, predeceasing the father, and the son never took hold of the peros, nevertheless, if and when the father eventually dies, so then the sale will be completed, the sale will be finalized. Even though the only thing the son ended up selling was only the guf hadavar. And this follows the opinion of Rosh Hashem and Malakish. The Amar Lo Shna Beisa Ben Bechayav De Lo Asli De De Ben Lo Shna Beisa Bechayav Haben De Asli De Haben Kana Lokeach. Rabbi Shimon Malakish is of the opinion that the Lokeach acquires it, whether or not the son ever got hold of the peros. Di itmar. And then the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, this is predicated on a major debate between Reish Lakish and his brother-in-law, Rav Yochanan. Di itmar machra ben bechaya av, umesa ben bechaya av. Let's say the son sold his guf during the lifetime of his father. Let's say then the son predeceases the father, so that the son never had a kinyan of peros. So Rav Yochanan amar lo kana lo kech. Rav Yochanan says, sale is void. It is not a valid sale. The son who only had the guf, never having the peros, selling it, it's not a sale. The Reish Lakish Amar Kana Lokech. Reish Lakish says that the Lokech is Kana. Now Rav Yochanan Amar Lokana Lokech Amalacha Ki Ketani Masnisen. Now Rav Yochanan's position says, now I know the Mishnah in Baba Basra. We all know the Mishnah in Baba Basra. And despite having known the Mishnah in Baba Basra, it's not going to affect, it's not going to influence the Halacha. Why? Because Machra Ben Lokana Lokech Ashi Amasav. Because the Mishnah in Baba Basra is only talking about a case where the son sold the guf, then dad dies, then the son got peros, so then and only then is the sale going to be finalized. However, Mesa ben Bechaya Av, if the son predeceases the father, which means that the only thing that the son had over the course of his lifetime was only the guf and not the peros, so then the lo asli de ben ki Mesa Av nami leis lelokech, then the sale will not be a valid sale. Why? Because the son, when selling, only had, over the course of his lifetime, the guf and not the peros. And, just wait 1 second, we're almost up to the punchline. Ama, and I even know what you're going to say, and the Gemara is going to say in just a moment, so just give it a second. So, Ama, Ama kasavar, kinyan peros, ki kinyan aguf dami. And all this is predicated on Rav Yochanan's general shita throughout Shas, and that is, kinyan peros, ki kinyan aguf. Look. The father wrote over the property to his son. The father retained the dividends for himself. So now we have the son owning the property, meaning his name is on the title. He is the owner of the property, but the father retained the payers. Now, that retention of payers by the father, when the father is holding back the dividends, how much is he considered a partner/owner on that property? Rav Yochanan says he is not a silent minority. He is a very serious minority shareholder on that property. Okay, now how exactly do the shares work in terms of percentage? I cannot say, I do not know. But in other words, his ownership of Peros is tantamount to him owning a piece of the property itself. The son, if all he had in his lifetime was just the guf but not the Peros, the son does not have the right because he is not the sole proprietor of that property. He is a partner, so to say, with his father, and he cannot sell it without, if his father was including the sale, that's one thing. But if it was just the son selling the property and he didn't have the peros, he does not have the right to complete that sale. That is all according to the shita of Rav Yochanan. So in the event that the son sold it and never got his hands on the peros, the sale is not going to be finalized. The sale will not be valid. V'chi zaven lav di de zaven, says Gemara, says it beautifully, succinctly. What he sold was not his. Therefore, the sale is not going to be a valid sale. That is all according to Rav Yochanan. And Rav Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Kan lo keach. And Rav Shimon ben Lakish says, no. If even though the son only had over his entire lifetime the kinyan aguf, but not the kinyan aperos, that doesn't matter. The kinyan aguf is sufficient ownership in order to sell. The fact that the father retained for himself the kinyan aperos, that's all, it's just dividends. It's not property. And so therefore the son wants to sell the property. The son has every right to do so. And the sale is going to be a valid sale, even though over the course of the remainder of his life, he never got the peros. It does not matter. Because according to Reish Lakish, the kinyan peros is lav ki kinyan haguf. He's not considered, the father's not considered an owner in the land. ki katani masisa macharaben ein lelokeach ad shiamus av ki meis av mia islay lelokeach lo shna lo meis haben b'chayav da asili adei de ben v'lo shna meis haben b'chayav da lo asili de haben kana lokeach. Gemara is here a little bit repetitive, but the basic point of the Gemara is, according to Reish Lakish, it does not matter whether or not the son predeceases the father, whether the father predeceases the son. If the son sold his kinyan haguf, sale valid. Even though father had peiros, that is not going to be enough to impede the sale. The sale is still going to go through. Alma, just one second. Alma kasevik kinyan peiros lav ki kinyan haguf dami. So that means that according to Reish Lakish, kinyan peiros is not considered kinyan haguf v'chi kazavin didei kazavin. And if you have kinyan haguf, that is enough. That is sufficient in order to affect a sale. Now, one more second. The Anan Hashta Bein Rav Yirmiyahu Ba'aba Bein Rav Yehuda Ki Rabbi Shimon Malakish Shvirlu. Gemara says, here's our assumption going forward in our Gemara. And that is, even though it's a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and even though, generally speaking, we favor the opinion of Rav Yochanan halachically over that of Reish Lakish, in this particular regard, everyone sides with Reish Lakish. Everyone says that Kenyan Aperos is not going to hold back a sale. And therefore, if you have the Kenyan Aguf, the sale should be finalized. And now we go back to our story over here. In our story, woman had her Nichse Malug, which means she was the owner of the Gufa Dover, and her husband only owned the Peros. She sold, in this case she gifted it, doesn't matter. She transferred ownership to her son. Should the transfer work, yes or no? Now, based on everything we've just said right now, based on the fact that the Amoraim in play over here follow the opinion of Reish Lakish, so the transfer of ownership should be completed. Okay. Yeah, Ben.
You know, in regard to the son and the father, the son has a latent kinyan on the payroll.
Gemara is going to raise that.
He sells that the buyer is stepping in the son's.
Yep.
The same rights and.
Correct. Gemara is going to raise that. Okay, very good. Okay, v'kamer of Yirmiyah ba'aba yisaka dachi kinyan peres kikina govdami ki ma'isa ava meis ha-ben b'chaya ava ma'i isla lokech ki kazavin hai lav didei kazavin el alav shmami na kinyan peres lav ki kinyan govdami. So, and then Rav Yirmiyah just simply summarizes everything we just said, meaning having on the Mishnah Baba Basra, noting that it does not matter whether or not the son dies before the father dies before the son, it really doesn't matter. Ultimately, all the father had was in the kinyan was just a kinyan aperos, not a kinyan aguf. The son only had a kinyan aguf, not a kinyan aperos. And yet, the Mishnah Baba Basra is telling us that when the son sells the property, even though all he had was a kinyan aguf, that is sufficient to transfer the sale of the property. The sale will be a valid sale. And now coming around full circle, so Rav Yirmiyah Ba'aba in our case seems to be absolutely correct in that when the woman transferred over her property to her son, the property should in fact be transferred. The parents are just going to go again with the property. The parents are just dividends from the property. It's the property which is the asset. The parents are just simply a benefit that comes off the asset.
And so if the son dies,
so then the property itself is going to go back, assuming there's no children and there's no yorish, so it's going to go back to the property, and then it'll get and then when the father dies, it's going to go back to the kids and redistributed equitably amongst the remaining children.
So if he had sold the deed to the property,
In our case over here, if he sold the deed and you file like a Reish Lakish, which we do, so then the sale is a valid sale. So then it's going to go to whoever bought it. And the pairs are going to go to whoever bought it. Okay? So now, Ajula Kamadur of Yehuda. So now, with this entire discussion, so basically, that was, you know, if this was an English class, that would be called a run-on sentence. But now, with all that stated, we went from the top of the Amud right over here to nearly the bottom of the Amud, and basically now have formulated what seems to be an excellent question, a substantial proof to Rav Yirmiyah Ba'aba, and a substantial question against Rav Yehuda. Because now we have just all learned together that as long as you have the Kinyan Aguf, even though you don't have Kinyan Peiros, and even if you never had Kinyan Peiros, it doesn't really matter, as long as he had a kinyan, a guf, the sale should be an effective sale. So when mom wrote over her properties to her son, so that should be good. And now, Rav Yehuda, quoting Shmuel, what have you got to say about that? Meaning, how can you say that, nope, the son doesn't acquire the property, nope, the husband, I'm sorry, yes, the husband acquires the property, how can he still maintain that position? So we have a quote in the name of Shmuel. Shmuel also knew the Mishnah Baba Basra. Let's not kid ourselves. Shmuel was fluent in the Mishnayos. And so Shmuel, despite the fact that he knows the Mishnah Baba Basra, says, look, it's not the same. And that's it. And that's the quote behind Shmuel. Meaning Shmuel says, it's great. Shmuel says, come on, the Mishnah Baba Basra, I'm familiar. And as far as it impacting our case over here, it doesn't impact our case over here. It's not the same. Period. Now, we'd love to know what's the difference between our case and the Mishnah Baba Basra. Meaning the Shmuel can be dismissive. He obviously knew that there was some distinction. But we, the studiers of Torah, so we'd like to know if we can understand a little bit better. So that's the continuation of the Gemara now. Now the Amoraim are going to try to explain how Shmuel saw it so clearly that there's a distinction between the Mishnah Baba Basra, which is talking about Kinyan Aperis, Kinyan Aguf. Somebody does not have the Kinyan Aperis and yet is able to sell the Guf Adavar, even though he never had Kinyan Aperis. And the Mishnah Baba Basra says it's effective and it works. And somehow the woman with her Nechse Malug, who only has a Kinyan Aguf and not a Kinyan Aperis, she cannot write over her Kinyan Aguf over to her son. I mean, she can, but it's not going to be effective. And why shouldn't it be effective? And Shmuel's dismissive response of, it's just not the same. Okay, so we need to now understand why it's not the same. My timer, why should that be? Amar Rav Yosef, Fishlama. So Rav Yosef says like this, look, here's the tip off from the Mishnah Baba Basra that's not the same. Itana Ibcha. Let's imagine that the Mishnah Baba Basra was not talking about a case where the father was writing over his estate to his son. But let's imagine the Mishnah discussed the following scenario. Hakosev Nechasev La'aviv. Where let's say a son wrote over his assets to his father. Okay, in other words, the son had property, and then it's unusual, but the son says to his father, look, Dad, here we go. I'll retain the dividends for myself, and you're going to be able to, and we're going to put you on, as the new owner of the property. So, ikal mifshaminei, the kinyan perislav ki kinyan aguftami. Now, if the Mishnah was writing that scenario, so then the Mishnah is effectively telling us the difference between kinyan peris, kinyan aguf, and basically everything we said up until now would be true. Elahashta diktani akosim nechasov liv, no. But the Mishnah over there chose the case very carefully and very specifically. The Mishnah there chose a scenario in which the father is writing over his properties over to his son. The father is putting the son's name on the title. Now, Mishum derayli yershohu. Ben's point, which is now the Gemara's point, which is now Rav Yosef's point. You'll notice over there, that's not just a scenario in which someone is putting in just anybody as the new owner of the property, but specifically his son. Now, what makes his son unusual and unique is that generally, as the law of averages would dictate, the son is going to inherit the property. Now, yes, it's true, the son could predecease the father, and that means the son will not inherit. But generally speaking, the son is royally Yorish. He's going to inherit the property. And so therefore, when the son sells the property, so consider, A, he owns the Kinyan Aguf of the property. B, he is not the current owner of the Paris of the property, but right now, statistically speaking, it's a pretty good shot to become the owner of the Paris of the property. So he has an actual ownership in the Guf, and a latent ownership in the payros. Then and only then is a sale going to be a valid sale, because he has now strong ownership in the property. Masha ain't came by us. When it comes to the woman only has a kinyan aguf. She doesn't have a kinyan aperis. Now, yes, it's true that it's possible the husband's going to die before she, and she'll then get the aperis, but and she's not royally yoresh. Her ownership of the Paris is not as strong as the latent ownership of the Paris that the son has on his father's property. So that could be the difference between the Mishnah Baba Basra in our case over here. So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, I don't really like this distinction. that we made. So Atu Bara Yaris Abba, Abba Lo Yaris Bara, meaning in terms of inheriting. A son can inherit his father's estate. You know, father can also inherit the son's estate. Meaning, in the world of Yerusha, so you could have a scenario in which the son inherits his father, which is normal, so to quote unquote, but you could also have a scenario in which the father inherits the son. Meaning, if the son dies and the son does not have any children, so then the next one who's going to step in line is going to be the father who's going to inherit his son. So, let's imagine, why do you think it is that the son wrote over his property to his father? Meaning, why did the son, instead of leaving his name as the owner of the property, why did he substitute his father's name in terms of his? Why do you think he did that? It must be, and this is Rashi's explanation of the Gemara, it must be that the son himself had his own sons, but quite frankly, and unfortunately, doesn't feel that his own children are responsible enough. So therefore, in terms of a little bit of estate planning, so what he did is, he put his father's name in as the owner of the property. So that, la'avruchinu, literally to try to avoid having his children become the owner of the property in the event that he dies. He felt that for his situation, this kind of estate planning is going to be the most prudent way so that somebody responsible is going to be taking care of his property. So, l'nechse mibre ka'ase. Hachanami. La'avruchin l'nechse ma'achu ase. And so one can imagine now the Mishnah Baba Basra, let's talk about the actual case in the Mishnah Baba Basra, where the father's writing over his estate to his son. You know why the father's doing that? Meaning, look, what's going to happen? The father's going to die most probably, and the son's going to inherit. So if the son is going to inherit the property anyway, why would the father write over the estate over to his son to make the son the owner? So it must be, I mean, really, it's just a simple pshat in the Mishnah Baba Basra, that there are other sons, and the father feels that, you know what? I know there are other sons. I know I have other sons, and God bless my other sons. And I love my other sons. But talking about money, we're talking about responsibility. This one's really the responsible one. So therefore, before I die, I'm going to put him as the owner of the property. So therefore, when I die, this will not become part of the estate. This will be his. And la'avruchino me'achua, in order to avoid the other brothers from inheriting this property. Okay, so again, there's estate planning in both directions, both in the case of the son writing over the property to his father and in the case of the father writing over the property to the son. So what Abaye is arguing to Rav Yosef is, you really think there's a difference between what the Mishnah's case where the father's writing it over to his son, or your insinuation where, you know the Mishnah didn't write the case of the son writing over to the property. Abaye is basically saying to Rav Yosef, I don't really see the difference. In both cases, it's effectively estate planning. And so I don't really see why there should be any kind of qualitative difference between the case the Mishnah actually discussed and the case that you thought the Mishnah would, the preferred discussion of the Mishnah, which would have created a bigger chiddush. It's really effectively the same. Ela mai einu dom lemishna seinu. Well, after Abaye knocked off Rav Yosef's explanation of why you feel the cases are different, so now you have to substitute it now with another explanation. Why is it that the Mishnah Baba Basra is not the same to our case? And so here we go now, and finally, after an entire amud of discussion, the answer. What is different between the Mishnah Baba Basra and our case over here? Let us set ourselves up one more time so that we get to really appreciate the punchline. The Mishnah Baba Basra says that if the son sells off property, and we're going to assume like Reish Lakish, we're going to learn the Mishnah Baba Basra like Reish Lakish, and the Gemara says that all the Amoraim in our discussion subscribe to Reish Lakish, so it's really the way to learn the Mishnah Baba Basra for our purposes. The Mishnah Baba Basra says that when a son sells property, even though all he has is just a kinyan aguf, the sale is going to be a valid sale. And even if the son predeceases the father, which means that the son never had the kinyan aperos, still the sale is going to be a valid sale. This is all the Mishnah Baba Basra. And what we have gained from that Mishnah Baba Basra is that even though all you have is a kinyan aguf and you sell it, the sale is valid. period. Meanwhile, in our case started with a with an actual case study where a woman, before she died, wrote over her property to her son. Then she dies, and it was nichse malog, which means that all she had was a kinyan haguf. She did not have the kinyan of peres. That was held by the husband. So Rav Yirmiyah said, okay, but she wrote over the property to her son, so therefore her son is now the owner of the property. To which Rav Yehuda, when hearing this, said, no, that's not what Shmuel said. Shmuel said the husband will now become the rightful owner of that property, and we don't understand why that should be after having learned the Mishnah Baba Basra. And Shmuel, the only thing we have, the only quote we have from Shmuel is Ein Adom LaMishnah Seinu. It's not the same. And what we're still now struggling to understand is why isn't it the same? And Rav Yosef offered an explanation, but Abai dismissed Rav Yosef's explanation. So here we are now, and we're only left to understand what's the difference. And the Gemara says, and we are four lines from the bottom, on Pei Chesem and Beis, Ela Mai Ein Adom LaMishnah Seinu. So how do you understand Shmuel's dismissal? So the Gemara says, Mishum Takanas Usha. So the Gemara says, a special institution, Takanas Usha. Okay. After the destruction of the Second Temple, Sanhedrin was sent into exile. And they were basically wandering Sanhedrin. And if I recall correctly, there were 10 different locations where the Sanhedrin went from when they were sent into exile. One of the places they went to was a town called Usha. And in Usha, there were a number of institutions. The one that I can remember and think of most vividly is that when a person gives tzedakah, even though it's a mitzvah, it's a strong recommendation. Okay, you have a various number of opinions that you should be giving at least 10%. One of the takanas they made in Usha is that you should not be giving more than 20% of your income, annual income, over to tzedakah. No more than 20%. So that was one takana they made in Usha. Here comes another takana they made in Usha, and that is that the Amar Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina BeUsha Itkinu, another institution that they made in Usha, Aisha Shemachra BeNichzei Malog BeChayabala, that if a woman were to sell her nichse malug while her husband's alive, umesa, and she dies, habal motzei miyad alakuchos, the husband is able to take it away from the lokech. Meaning, effectively, what the chachamim did is they blocked her ability to sell the nichse malug. Period. Now, if you take a look at Rashi over here says, afagav de ba'ama lavke kinyan agovdami. Rashi says, look, after having learned the end of yesterday's daf, and after having come to the conclusion that we know kinyan aperis lavka kinyan aguf, and that means that the husband's kinyan aperis should not be strong enough to block her ability to sell, and it's not. However, the institution, the main usha, is that even though the kinyan aperis is not able to block her sale, the chachamim are. The chachamim instituted to block her sale. Baal benichse ishto amua rabbanan l'shibudei. The chachamim strengthened, reinforced the husband's shibud, his right / lien on the property, mishum eva, and it's basically there to try to create a more harmonious union between husband and wife. Meaning, if at any point in time the wife in the marriage can say, you know what, I'm selling my nechse malog, it's not going to, it probably won't bode well for the relationship. So therefore, the Chachamim, in order to strengthen the marriage, blocked her ability to sell her nechse malug. Rashi then continues to write, and basically what the husband now turns into, because of Takanas Usha, is a first buyer on that property. He's the first one in line. Anyone who buys that property from the woman is now, based on Takanas Usha, going to be considered the second buyer. Not the first buyer. The husband is going to be treated like the first buyer, and so therefore, anyone who buys it, it's going to go back to the husband.
So this takana was not known to Rabbi Yochanan and.
Wait, just one at a time. What?
The husband has to pay.
Does the husband have to pay? In other words, yeah,
if the mother gives to the son, the husband has to buy it from the
son. In this case, she gifted it, so there was no money. There was no money transferred. So over here,
she sells it to a buyer.
She gets money. So I'm not even clear, because once you have Takanas Usha, so then the sale is really blocked. So I'm not even sure if there would be even a transfer of money. Meaning, Takanas Usha is going to demand that the sale is not even a sale. Yeah.
So Rabbi Yochanan and Yemad Rabba did not know about this Takana Kusha?
So Rabbi Yochanan, no. You see, Rabbi Yochanan was just
explaining. Okay,
but Rabbi Yochanan was just explaining the Mishnah in Baba Basra. So all I'm saying, right.
Where was he?
Right, correct. So that right. So that part I don't know. That part's tricky. The Rabbi Yochanan piece to it, that's easy because he was just discussing the Mishnah in Baba Basra, and that's another issue of whether or not Pekinyan appears is Pekinyan good for not. That's separate from our discussion. Our discussion now is that specifically in the case of a woman with her nechse malug, Chachamim blocked her sale. Now, did Rav Yirmiyah, this part of the question I don't know the answer to, did Rav Yirmiyah not hold of Takana Susha? Did he not know about Takana Susha? I don't know. That part I don't know. So the... Okay, so that's it, and that's the secret sauce to Shmuel, and that's really everything. Meaning, and by the way, if you look at the top Rashi, which I skipped on the way to get all the way over here, you'll see the top Rashi actually tells us that that's in fact so. Right, you look at the top Rashi that I skipped all this while. Right, the husband's considered lokeach rishon. You know, it's funny. Had I read the Rashi all the way in the beginning, it would have been very difficult to understand what does that mean. The husband's like a lokeach rishon. He's a first buyer. He's not a first buyer. Meaning, now we know it's a rabbinic legislation, it's a rabbinic institution, that he's going to be treated like the first buyer, and that any subsequent buyer after that point in time is going to be just that. A second buyer, not a first buyer, and the husband's going to be the first one in line. Okay. Brings us now Amar Avidi Bar Avin. Okay, and... now that we've introduced ourselves now to Takana Susha, so the Gemara says, well, that's interesting. Now that we know about Takana Susha, a lot of things make a lot more sense. So, for example...
Something on the maintenance of the will of the wife, if you're saying that now the husband does have a wife, but in heaven we've always said that the mitzvah always belongs to the wife.
No,
the saying he has a...
He has a shibud.
He has a wife to go with. When she does... She can't give it to her son.
Right.
That means now, doesn't that contradict you to everything we've learned about it?
Well, no. In other words, outside of the woman's ownership of Nechse Malug, if there's any other scenario, like the father-son, like if there's any other scenario where there's a split between the Paris and the Gofa Davar, so then we're gonna side with Reish Lakish. We're gonna say, okay, the Paris is not gonna block the sale. Whoever owns the Paris is not going to block a sale. That's in general. And then specifically with a woman and her Nechse Malug, so there, because of special legislation, so the Chachamim block the sale. In this specific case, and that's it.
But block the sale, but not the gift to the son.
Huh?
Gift to the son is not blocked.
It is blocked. Yeah. Absolutely blocked. Meaning Shmuel's right. Meaning the husband's going to get it.
What about Stone Barzel?
Okay, that's...
If it's
Stone Barzel, so that's, that went into the Ksuva. That belongs to the husband.
No, the wife.
The Son Barzel belongs to the husband, meaning it goes into the Ksuva. Huh?
Son Barzel. Isn't Barzel like his?
Yeah, correct. It's iron sheep, meaning that in the event that he dies, so then she'll get the full value back. But during the marriage, so it's his. Okay. Let's continue in the Gemara. So I'm Ravidi Bar Abba Nafanami Tanina. So now the Gemara is basically like, hey, This Takana Susha clarifies a lot. So, for example, let's learn a Mishnah together in Makos. Okay, the Makos, it's funny. The Makos is a very short Masechta. It's, I think, 23 Blad of Gemara. So it's a really short Masechta. It's three Prakim. And so a person says, you know what, I'd like to eat meat during the 9 days, so I'm going to learn Masechta Makos. It's really short. And then you get to, like, the second or third daf in Makos, and you're going to hit this Mishnah that we're about to learn right now. And there is an unusually long Rashi over there in that Mishnah. And basically, right, just it's fun. This summer, I just went through the Rashi with a student of mine. And it's really difficult. And basically, at that point in time, people like check out of the Masechta. They're like, okay, I'm done. Anyway, the Me'inim Anu Ibishpani Shagir Shes Yishta V'Nasan Suvasa. So you have a pair of witnesses. You understand the first parak of Makos, which we're quoting right now, is dealing with the topic of Edom Zomim. Right, fantastically interesting topic that deals with the idea that when you have witnesses, we discussed this recently, when you have witnesses who conspired against the defendant, and it turns out that they are proven to be Edom Zomemim, so what do you do to them? Whatever they conspired to do, the defendant is going to now rebound and hit them. Okay, we just discussed it. Anyway, so the so they're going to testify now about a person that he divorces, that he divorced his wife, and he paid her the ksuva. This is what these witnesses testify. Now, what they're saying is patently untrue. V'hare hi tachtav u'misham shato. And we do a little bit of investigation, and over here you don't need really intelligent investigators, and we see that the husband and wife are living together, she's serving him, everything looks fine. And nimsu zomimim. Now that's not the critical part. The critical part is that another pair of witnesses come and say, regarding the first pair of witnesses, how could you even say such a thing? When exactly are you saying the divorce took place? Last Tuesday? 5 p.m.? Well, that's funny. Last Tuesday at 5 p.m., you were with us on the west coast of this country. Like, how could, you weren't even there at the time. Like, what are you talking about? And he paid the ksuva, you were not even in the location. You were in a totally different location. So now we know, the halach is that we believe the second pair of witnesses, not the first pair of witnesses. And because the first pair of witnesses wanted to cause a loss of money, so therefore, vasitzim lo kesher zamam laso sachiv. So we do to them what they conspired to do to the woman. V'nimsu zomemim ein omrim yishamu kol ksuvasa. Now here comes the tricky part. Which, again, if you're learning the beginning of the Mishnah, you're learning the beginning of Makos, so Rashi there discusses extensively. I'm just going to say it very quickly, and I'm going to oversimplify. You see, these witnesses are causing a loss to the woman. But when you're talking about real loss to the woman, what are we talking about? Meaning, we're talking about her ksuva. Now, the ksuva is an IOU. It's a note. It's not actual money. And in terms of what they wanted to lose is the current value of Riksuva. And so, basically, we're talking about factoring. Meaning, it's paper, and what is right now the current value of that piece of paper? So, like any good paper, like it could be sold. And whatever its current value is, that's what the Edom Zomemim are going to have to pay her. The real value, the actual value of the paper right now. And then the difficulty is just simply factoring and figuring out how much this paper is worth. So that's what the Mishnah goes on to describe. So Ein Omrim Yisham Kol Ksuvasa La Tovas Hana Ksuvasa. So you only pay the Tovas Hana. Tovas Hana in this context means the factored value of that paper right here, right now. Ezu Tovas Hana Ksuvasa Omden. And here the Mishnah gives us not a formula, but basically a way to figure it out. In other words, look, you have a number of eventualities that's going to happen. Either she'll get divorced, or he'll die. In either one of those cases, she'll receive the full value of the ksuva. But also what may end up happening is she may predecease him. If that were to happen, you get zero. So basically, you now get an actuary into the room, and then you figure out, well, considering the eventuality of this, and I know the number of variables over here are unlimited. How old he is, his health, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, but basically you have somebody underwrite and figure out how much this piece of paper is worth, and that is the amount of money that the Edom Zomemim are going to have to pay her. Period. That is the Mishnah in Makos. Okay, and I oversimplified it, but for our purposes, that's fine. The isakadacha leisa latakanasusha amar yushanabala. So the Gemara says now, had it not been for takanasusha, let's just imagine for a moment there was no such thing as takanasusha. So now there's another consideration that the Mishnah didn't even mention, which is tis ben ksuva salagamre. She could sell her ksuva. Meaning, when we say seller ksuva, meaning that she has nechse malog and she could sell it. So that is another consideration which the Mishnah does not seem to take into account. Why is that? So the Gemara says, oh, light bulb. The reason is because there is such a thing as takana susha, which blocks her ability to sell. So once we now know this idea of takana susha, we look at the Mishnah Makos and it's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Amar Abaye, Amar b'nechse melog, Yomar b'nechse tzom barzel. So Abaye says, oh look, I don't know if that's so super compelling. look, you're right. They blocked her ability of Nechsei Maluk, but they also blocked the ability of Nechsei Tzoron Barzel as well. So the Nechsei Tzoron Barzel, as we discussed earlier, that's the Nedunya, that's the dowry that is written into the Ksuva. So, and for that, the husband has full achrayus, has full responsibility. So, when in the eventuality of death, he's going to pay it back. So, for sure, she has no right to sell that. So, maybe the Mishnah in Makos is not talking about her nechsel malug. Maybe, again, it's just a deflection. Maybe her nechsel malug she can sell. Maybe what the Mishnah in Makos is talking about was the nechsel tzoron barzel, where there, everyone's in agreement. Well beyond Takana Susha, there she does not have the right to sell the Nechsei Tzoron Barzel. It's not hers. It belongs during the marriage to her husband. So, even though, yes, the Mishnah in Makos seems to indicate that she can't sell a Nechsei Malug, it's not compelling. It could be the Mishnah talking about Nechsei Tzoron Barzel. Okay, let's wrap it up. Okay, we have seen today, it was a tough Gemara, but just speaking personally, really enjoyable once you start understanding it. I just recently started understanding. So we had today, it started with a story of a woman who wrote her Nechsei Malug over to her son, a machlokas amongst the Amoraim, whether or not the son, after she died, whether the son actually gets to keep it. Shmuel said no. We spent most of today trying to understand. There's a Mishnah Baba Basra that allows a person to sell property even though the only thing he owns is the guf and not the peros. Nechsei Malug. She owns the guf, not the peros. Why can't she write over to her son? And after a lengthy discussion, the punchline to all that is that in theory she could, but the Chachamim blocked it in order to create more harmony between husband and wife. So they blocked her ability to sell the Nechsei Malug. She cannot sell her Nechsei Malug. That sale is going to be blocked. And then the Gemara says, now that, and this was instituted in Usha, and once we familiarized ourselves with Takanas Usha, we looked at the Mishnah and Makos together, and because when the Mishnah and Makos talks about the factoring of Riksuva, doesn't take into account the possibility of her selling Nechsei Malug, it's a signal that the Mishnah in Makos is actually in line with Takana Susha, although the Gemara admitted that's not a compelling argument, but it seems to be a good one.